I think you've all chose to come here and attend this particular seminar having something to do with your wishing to increase your realization about Krishna's holy names, or something like that.
There's one song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Emana Dolava Mati, Samsara Vitore, and that's the first line of the song. And that line,
that means that it is a wicked mind, wicked Dormada, a wicked mind has brought me into this material world. It is a wicked mind. If anyone doesn't accept the fact that the real problem of life is only one thing, it's our mind. That those who don't accept that, we hope they will by the end of at least the first hour of this class, because this is the reality of the situation, and we experience it continuously, how everything, how we view the world, simply depends on our mind. If we're in a good mood, everything is wonderful. If we're in a bad mood, everyone is terrible, and everyone is doing everything wrong. So much simply depends on our mind. And it is a wicked mind that has brought us to this material world, and it keeps us in the material world. Now, the Bhagavatam in the third canto in the teachings of Kapila Muni, in the 26th chapter, which is entitled The Fundamental Principles of Material Existence, Kapila Muni describes the principles, the categories that the universe is created from. And the original primal category, the first category, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, ultimately it's Krishna, but Lord Mahavishnu, or Karana Dakshaya Vishnu, is the Aham Eva Sam Eva Gre, Nanyat Sat, Sadasat Param, that in the beginning there is nothing but Krishna. And then, due to Krishna's desire, out of his kindness, practically speaking, because he wants the souls, the conditioned souls, to have an opportunity to change their ways. And he wants those souls, especially he wants those souls who are sadhakas, who are devotees, to have an opportunity to increase their devotion to the point of bhava and prema. He creates this universe, or all the universes. Unless our devotion is at the point of prema, we have to stay within the material world. We have no qualification to be in Goloka Vrindavan. So the material world, practically speaking, is a field, an opportunity to increase our devotional service. And this really is the purpose of the material world. And if we learn how to see the material world in this way, our whole life can shift. It is nothing but Krishna's mercy. It is nothing but Krishna's opportunity to grab his mercy and increase our devotion. Now, the first thing in the creation of the material world, as described by Lord Kapilade, especially in this chapter, is that Krishna glances at the pradhan. The pradhan means the first or the primal element. And it is like a cloud, a material, a very fine and subtle material cloud covering the Brahma Jyoti. And by the power of Krishna's glance and his desire, icha shakti, that pradana, which is it is undifferentiated. There is nothing directly manifest within this pradana. But as a result of his glance, which includes the living entities and their karma, and Krishna's kala shakti. What's Krishna's kala shakti? Time. Time is like a big stirring spoon in this big primordial pot of undifferentiated elements. And that's what time does in the material world. It doesn't allow anything to rest in a peaceful way. It moves everything. This is the function of time. And it is unstoppable. Kalosmin lokachaya krit. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita. So when that glance of the Lord hits the material, this pradhan, the subtle material elements, the result is that the material world begins to manifest. And the first thing that manifests is false ego. But what is this false ego? A little bit earlier in the 26th chapter, Lord Kapila Muni describes that there are four subtle senses. They are false ego, ahankar, man, buddhi, and what else? And citta. So there's consciousness, that's not the pure consciousness of the soul. The mind, the intelligence, and the false ego. And these four are one thing, actually, one element, but they are defined differently according to how they are acting, how they are functioning. There is one thing, and when it is functioning as a perverted false sense of identity, misidentification of who I am, it's called ahankara, false ego. If it's functioning as intelligence, it is called buddhi. If it's functioning as consciousness, being aware, awareness, it is called citta. And when it is functioning as mind, it is called mind or buddhi. Now, what is the function of the mind? Basically, the Bhagavatam explains that it only does two things. It wants, it accepts, and rejects. I don't want. The intelligence provides the different categories to place the objects that we perceive into. For instance, I look at this over here. And what is it? What do my eyes see? My eyes don't, there's just unlimited stimulation coming into the eyes. And it's up to the intelligence to fit this particular stimulation, this particular one, differentiated from this different stimulation upon the eyes. It's up to the intelligence to call it something, to conceptually analyze it. So when the eyes take in this information, it doesn't analyze it. It doesn't say that this is a microphone. That's the function of the intelligence. And when the eyes take in the information that is interpreted by the intelligence as ajman kap or panchapatra kap, then the mind accepts. So the intelligence provides the categories, and the mind accepts or rejects it. It rejects this as a clock. It accepts it as an ajman kap. It accepts this as a, what is it? What exactly is it? Stopwatch or a timer? And it's not a cow or a horse. Obviously, the mind doesn't accept it in that category, that conception. And it accepts water when you're thirsty is good. And it accepts hot chilies when you're thirsty is terrible. I don't want that. So the mind's business is simply to accept and reject. This is acceptable. I want it. And when the mind wants something, it really wants something. And when the mind rejects something, it really rejects something. We'll speak more about this tomorrow. The Bhagavatam also explains in the 25th chapter, or rather later in the 26th chapter, that the function of the mind is accepting and rejecting thoughts and reflections and that give rise to desire. So when the mind looks at something and finds it very acceptable, when the mind places something in the category of acceptable and it really wants it, the mind just simply focuses on that alone. And I found myself in the situation so many times in my life. I'm walking down the street and something looks very, very desirable from the distance. It looks so wonderful and attractive. And my mind starts imagining a whole fantasy about how wonderful this is. It will fantasize like anything. I'm not seeing the object even. What am I seeing? I'm seeing the fantasies of my mind. And then when one gets close, this is again describing my experience, to that very same object, I see that it's actually horrible. And then my mind goes, zip! Oh! The thing that was so attractive in my mind pulling me along, I was accepting it. I wanted it. In fact, during those moments, I didn't want anything else in the universe. I only wanted that. And then 10 seconds later, oh, icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. What does that mean? Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. It's completely being pulled around by I want this, I hate that, I want that, icha, I want, dvesha, repulsed. And this is what's causing the bewilderment of the living entities, meaning us in this world. And it's based basically on the imagination of the mind. And therefore, emana dvormati samsara vitore. It is a wicked mind that brings me and keeps me in this world. And in fact, when one performs religious activities or spiritual practices, although many people perform these things for their own reasons based on their mind, there is only one reason basically to perform yoga, to give charity, to acquire knowledge. And this is described by the Avadhuta Brahmana in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. I want to read this. I find this so fascinating. And when I'm having difficulty, which means I'm identifying with my mind doing something basically not surrendering to Krishna, sometimes I'll read this, but this little section over here. But this first verse, Dhanam svadhamo niyamo yamascha shrutam chakamani chasad vratani. This is 11:23:45, and we'll read some verses further. Charity, prescribed duties, observance of major and minor regulative principles, hearing from scriptures, pious work, purifying vows, all of these, plus more, have as their final aim the subduing of the mind. indeed, concentration of the mind on the Supreme is the highest yoga. But this mind of mine, it doesn't want to be subdued. Rather, it wants to grab onto something. I want this. I hate this. I want that. I want that. I hate that. Icha dvesha samudena. I want. I hate. I want. I hate. And the mind becomes fully in control over me. And the result of that is emana dormati, samsara vitare. I'm in the material world to suffer the incredible pains of samsara. Samsara means birth and death. And if any of you aren't old enough to understand yet that this is, that the material world is basically a miserable place, you could either believe the Bhagavatam or you could believe those of us who are older and whose knees hurt and back hurts and head hurts and eyes hurt and teeth hurt. That's my newest experience, teeth hurting. And or you can be patient with yourself and you'll find out for yourself. Samsara vitare, and it is emara dhuramati, this wicked mind that brings us into the material world for all this suffering. And the purpose of all these pious activities and religious activities is to subdue the mind, make it peaceful, bring it under control, so it's not always grasping and pushing at the elements of the material world. But this isn't all that the Avadhuta Brahmana says, the Avanti Brahmana. He says, if one's mind is perfectly fixed and pacified, then tell me what need does one have to perform ritualistic charity and other pious rituals. The purpose of all these things is to subdue the mind and make it peaceful and ultimately to focus it on Krishna. And if one has achieved that, then there is no need for these lesser religious practices. And if one's mind remains uncontrolled, lost in ignorance, then what are the use of these engagements for him? One's missing the whole purpose. Listen to this verse describing the mind. All the senses have been under the control of the mind since time immemorial. All the senses have been under the control of the mind, my mind, my wicked mind, since time immemorial. And the mind himself never comes under the sway of any other. Completely independent, wants what it wants now and when it wants it. Like little children. But the mind, I will tell you, is actually just a bluff. It's just like a puff of, it's like smoke and fog. But it is so powerful when we're under the sway of the mind. It appears, what the mind wants appears to be the only reality for us. Have any of you ever had this experience? Huh? Listen to this. He is stronger than the strongest. This is what the Avanti Brahman is saying. And his godlike power is fearsome. Therefore, anyone who can bring the mind under control becomes the master of the senses. And failing to conquer this irrepressible, this unstoppable enemy, the mind, whose urges are intolerable and who torments the heart, failing to conquer this enemy, many people are completely bewildered and they create useless quarrels with others. Thus they conclude that other people are either their friends, their enemies, or parties indifferent to them. So, who is being called the enemy? The mind only. But due to the mind, we see someone else as a friend. And we see someone else as an enemy. And of course, interestingly enough, our friend, if they happen to do the wrong thing, how quickly they cross to the mind, just rejects them from the category of friend and quickly invites them into the category of enemy. And then immediately we want to strangle them, we wish them harm, we are happy with their miseries, and accept that we know they deserve more. This is the mind, this fearsome mind, and it can change just like that. Persons who identify with this body, which is simply the product of the material mind, what Bhagavad Gita verse explains this? That the body is just a product of the mind. We don't usually think of it like that, do we? But the body comes from the mind. Adishtayam manashtayam visya upasevate. Based on the mind's desires, we accept a new body. The body simply comes from the mind. And we can all write down long lists because no one's ever satisfied with their situation. Because we look around and we see someone has something we don't have. And what's that called? When you look around and you see someone has something that you don't have and you don't like it. Envy. So the mind is constantly seeing other, and of course, how could, only Krishna has everything. So there's always going to be people who have what we don't have and what we want. And we have, and the mind just grabs onto that. And we become envious based on that. And we're thinking, only if I could have that, or if I don't have it, at least I wish he didn't have it or she didn't have it. But I wish I had that. And why? Why do we want these things? Whether it's more money or more beauty or more intelligence or strength or whatever. Whatever it is, or taller or shorter or thinner or fatter or... on, or more musical ability, or more genius, or ability for this, or ability for that. And we just, the mind is bewildering us to grab onto these things as if what? If I was taller, I would be happy. As if I had, and the people who are tall, they're only if I was shorter. And Prabhupada once told the story of C.R. Das, who was one of the big Congress freedom fighters early during the time of Gandhi. And he was so wealthy. He was a big, big lawyer. He was so wealthy. And he was performing sacrifices. He was charitable. He was so respected. And he was doing some not-so-pious things also. But one day his wife and he were sitting and a beggar walked by. And C.R. Das was very morose. And he said, and his wife said, you know, you have everything. Chittaranjan was his name. You have everything. Why do you look so unhappy? What do you want? And he pointed to the beggar and said, I want to be like him. And the beggar is thinking, I want to be like him. And everyone, their minds are just grasping, I want this and I don't want that. And then I'll be happy. And this is how the wicked mind keeps us in the material world. Because there is one thing and one thing only that can be done. Everyone knows what it is, at least theoretically, and we have different amount of experiences of that. But there's one thing, and one thing only that makes the soul happy, and that's when he's situated in his natural position as lover of Krishna. So the Avanti Brahman has experienced this very heavily. He continues, if you say that these people are the cause of my happiness and distress, and then he explains, what does that have to do with the soul? And who are you becoming angry at? If you think this person is my problem, and this person is my problem, and this person is the one bringing me happiness, what does that have to do with the soul, who we are? If you say that the demigods who rule the bodily senses cause suffering, What does this have to do with the soul? Am I the cause of my own suffering and distress? Then we shouldn't blame others, since happiness and distress would be the simple the nature of the soul. But happiness and distress aren't the nature of the soul. It's just happiness that's the nature of the soul. So it's not that we are causing it. The soul is causing his own suffering or happiness. And has anyone been to a good astrologer in the last year? Only one. Only one will admit it. Two will admit it. Okay. And if we examine the hypothesis that the planets are the cause of our suffering and happiness, then also, what is the relationship with the soul? Because the soul is eternal. After all, the effects of the planets apply only to things that have taken birth. Expert astrologers have explained that the planets are only causing pain to each other ultimately. Therefore, since the living entity is distinct from these planets and from the material body, against whom should he be angry? The soul is eternal. If we think that it is our karma that is causing our happiness and distress, we're still not dealing with the soul. And if we accept and think that time is against us or causing our happiness and distress, that experience can also not apply to the soul. And then he explains some nature of the soul. Now, and then the question is, of course, well, I'm experiencing so much happiness and distress every day, every hour, every half hour, every 10 minutes. Well, how to cross beyond this? This creation by Maya of the material world is like an ocean. It is so difficult to cross. Well, how to cross this ocean? And then the Avanti Brahmana says a very, very famous verse, which is the verse of the sannyasis. Itamsa ashtaya paratmanishtam. I shall cross over the insurmountable ocean of nescience. What does nescience mean? Ignorance, all these misidentifications, the grabbing of the mind, the pushing of the mind. This is an ocean of ignorance. And we are swimming in that ocean of ignorance. And without understanding who we actually are. So I shall cross over this insurmountable ocean of nescience. Now, that's interesting. Cross over something that's insurmountable? Well, that's what he just said. I shall cross over this insurmountable ocean of nescience. And that's what this ocean of Maya actually seems. But he shall cross over it by being firmly fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. This is what he says. If we can just somehow or another get firmly fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna, then we shall cross over something that it is impossible to cross over. The insurmountable ocean of nations. This was approved by the previous acharyas. This is the path of the acharyas, he said, who were fixed in firm devotion to the Lord, Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. E mana dur mati samsara vitore. That a wicked mind keeps us in this material world. And again, the first verse of that section of the Avanti Brahmana was that all the purpose of religious activity is nothing more than to subdue the mind and stop it from grabbing onto the things of this material world as if they would bring us happiness, because they won't. And it is time that we acknowledge that there is only one problem in this world. And again, it is not my karma, It is not him, it is not her, it is not this circumstance, it is not that circumstance. The only problem is my mind. So don't, I didn't mean that the only problem you have is my mind. But I meant to say that everyone should think in this way, that the only problem that we all have is our own wonderful mind that we fully identify with. And I will tell you something. If one thinks that from now on I'm not going to listen to my mind, and I'm just going to, we should practice trying this, but oh, is your mind going to give you a kick in retaliation? Oh, you think you're in charge? I'll show you who's in charge. Who's the boss? Who's listening to who? This mind, did you remember that verse, how it described the mind? This fearsome, practically all-powerful, he's completely in control, but doesn't have anyone who he is under control of? This is what we're dealing with, and it is not easy. But before we all get too depressed about it, there's something very, very, very wonderful. And that very, very wonderful thing is that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come and he's given us something very wonderful. And that is, of course, the Yuga Dharma of chanting Krishna's holy name. Krishna Vanam, Tusha Krishna, that Krishna. He's always Krishna Vanam. The syllables of Krishna are always coming from his mouth. It describes it in Chaitanya Bhagavat, how when Mahaprabhu, after he took initiation from Sripada Ishwara Puri, he went to Kanai Natashala. And there he saw Krishna. And then Krishna disappeared. And then, after this is happening, he came back to Navadvipa. And then from that time on, there were only the words, where is Krishna Chandra? Where is Krishna? Krishna, Krishna. Where is Krishna? Nothing else came from his mouth. And one time he came to Gadara Pandit and said, where is Krishna? Mahaprabhu was so agitated. Where is Krishna? And Gadara Pandit said, don't worry. Krishna is in your heart. Mahaprabhu immediately began ripping away his chest, and then Gadara Pandit pacified him, and then Satyamati became so satisfied with Gadara Pandit because he was the only one who could keep Mahaprabhu peaceful when he was in a mood of intense, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? But we should know that unless we intensify our where is Krishna, where is Krishna, where is Krishna, that we cannot proceed very far in our Krishna consciousness. A more appropriate way to say that is that there must come a state as we go on in our Krishna consciousness. Where is Krishna? I want to serve Krishna. I want to serve Krishna's devotees, the servants of the servants of Krishna. When that becomes the only thing that's important to us. But to do that, we have to fight the only noble battle, and that is the battle against the mind, because the mind is saying, yes, don't worry, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? But how about this right now? Where is something to eat? Where is something to listen to? Where is this? And did you hear what he said about you? Oh, if you heard that, and then the mind will just go on and on and on and on with long lists of things, of distractions, things to distract us from the real mission in our life. But Mahaprabhu is very calm, very kind. He comes, Krishna Vanam, Tisha Krishna, Sangopas, Ranga Parashada, Yajyar, Sankitana Praya, Yajantihi Sumedasa. He's come to give us the weapon to fight the mind and to fight the age of Kali. And that weapon, as we well know, is the chanting of Krishna's holy names, of the chanting of the Maha Mantra especially. Now we should take I don't know how long it will take, but if everyone would please put their hands in the air, we're going to chant Krishna's holy names very loudly. Okay. Hare Krishna! Hare! That one more time, and the next time, keep in mind Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Oh, this is attractive. I think we're going to have to make the door a little wider. That Mahaprabhu, when he chanted Krishna's names, he knew Abhinatam Namanamano, that Krishna and Krishna's names were the same. And he didn't want anything else but Krishna, to serve Krishna, to love Krishna. So just keep that little point in mind, and we'll chant again. One more time. And the hands in the air perhaps represent, oh, Krishna, like Draupadi puts her hands in the air. I have not, what else do I have that's going to take care of me? There's only mercy. Okay. Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! 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 Hare! Hare! Hare Rama! Hare Rama! Rama Rama! Hare Hare! Thank you. Now, Mahaprabhu gave us the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and he also gave us 8 verses that teach us how to chant Hare Krishna and how to make advancement. All the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is in, the whole philosophy is in these 8 verses. So we're going to go over the first verse today, and Adi Prasapu will give everyone a sheet that has the first 3 verses. In the next 2 days, we'll go over the next 2 verses, one by one.
First, raise your hand those that have already registered. Because
you printed according to that.
Sorry, I printed more, but not so many.
Yeah.
Please first those that have already registered. Okay.
We're going to have to go faster than that, Prabhu. Somehow or another. Otherwise my mind's going to get disturbed. So raise your hand if you know the verse by heart. That's one of the first things that devotees learn in the movement. So why don't we say it? Seto dharpana marjanam bhava mahardavati navapanam Shreya Karaiva Chandrika Vataranam Vidyavaru Jeevanam Anandam Bhunivajanam Pradipadam Vanamita Sadhanam Sarvatma Snaparam Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. So, that verse, this verse, maybe we can just look on with others, and if you don't have it, please look on with someone, or but the Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam, what does that mean? What does Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam mean? What? You have to raise your hand. I've taught for so many years, I can't help it. Okay. Yes. So the chanting of Krishna's name, Sri Krishna Sankirtanam, especially congregationally, is victorious in the material world, in this world. So what does it mean to be victorious? It means that it conquers, the holy names conquer this whole ocean that we were just speaking of. The terrible mind and everything that it is in, that it entangles us within. The holy name conquers this. It is victorious. And it establishes us at the lotus feet of Krishna. Let's see if this is the verse. No. I'll read that later. So it is victorious. And part of its being victorious is that it awards seven results. And the seven results that the chanting of Krishna's name awards us, those seven results are described in this verse. So the first one is Keto Darpanam Marjanam. And that, as we all know, means that chanting Hare Krishna cleanses the heart. And what does it mean that it cleanses the heart? The mind, as we were just speaking of, has so many items that it is attached to and averse to. It wants and it doesn't want. And all these items are part of the plan on one side, that the only if plan. Only if I had this, I would be happy. Or only if that was removed, I would be happy. That is to bewilder us. And chanting Hare Krishna cleanses, it removes volumes and volumes, tons and tons of these type of desires that are sitting in the heart. The heart, the mind, the intelligence, false ego, consciousness. The consciousness becomes cleansed. And when the mind is grasping for one thing after another, one loses the ability to see oneself. When the mind is covered by the dust and dirt of all these material desires, like the mirror that has, a mirror has so much dirt upon it that when you look in that mirror, you cannot see your face. You cannot see your own face. So when that mirror is cleansed of all that dirt and dust accumulated for so many births, in this birth, I'm thinking, I want that and I want that. And then in my next life, I get that and I'm adding so many more desires, so much more dirt. And my heart is so covered with unlimited dirt and dust in the form of material desires. And chanting Hare Krishna can cleanse them all away with one mantra. It's so powerful. And then Bhava Mahadevagni Navapanam, that chanting Krishna's names extinguishes the forest fire of material existence. Samsara Tava Naralila Loka. So Davanala means forest fire. And there's a place not far from here where Krishna swallowed the forest fire after he chastised the clear snake. What is that place called? Have you ever been to Davanalakund? It's the place where Krishna swallowed the forest fire after chastising Kaliya. It's a kund there. So Bhava Maha, this great forest fire of Bhava, of birth and death of material existence, is extinguished by chanting the holy names. Shreya Karayva Chandrika.
So there is one metaphor that's used of the mirror is cleansed, but here is another one. When the mirror is cleansed, then Shreya Karayva Chandrika Vitaranam means the white lotus of our good fortune, the Chandrika, the moonbeams of the holy name, the moonlight of the holy name causes the white lotus of our good fortune, our spiritual life to blossom. So cleansing on one side, removing of things that do not belong, that do not make us happy, and on the other side, the blossoming of our spiritual life. These are the first three results of chanting Krishna's holy names, of Sri Krishna Sankirtan. And this is what Param Vijayate Sri Krishna, this is victory over the material world, removing material existence, and the holy names has that potency.
Anandam Bhudi Vidyavaru Shreyakara Vichandrika Vitaranam Vidyavaru Jivanam. Vidyavaru Jivanam is a, when you translate it, it's hard to understand. Vidya, knowledge, Vadu, wife, Jivanam, the life of the wife of knowledge. And the meaning is that just as a wife naturally follows her husband, transcendental knowledge naturally follows the chanting of Krishna's holy names. So one gets spiritual knowledge, and as Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, this spiritual knowledge is up to the point of knowing one's actual eternal relationship with Krishna, who we actually are in relationship with Krishna, our ultimate sambandha jnana. Krishna's holy names gives this. Anandam Bhudi Vardhanam. What does Anandam Bhudi Vardhanam mean? That chanting Krishna's holy names is an ever-increasing ocean of bliss. Ever-increasing. There is no end to it because Krishna's holy names and Krishna are none different. Pratipadam Purnamritam Svadhanam. That step by step one gets the tastes. That one, the soul, is always hankering for. Where the example that Govinda Das gives, it's like searching for water in the desert. In the material world, we're in the desert of the material world, and we're so thirsty. And the pleasure we get, we're dying of thirst, and the pleasure we get is like one drop of water. And if you're dying of thirst in the material world and someone comes to you and says, I have water for you, and you say, please give it to me, and they take out one eyedropper and give you one drop, how frustrating that will be, what to speak of it not saving your life. But the holy names is Purnam Amrita, complete bliss, Svadhanam, the taste, the satisfaction, ever increasing. And in this way, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan and Savatma Snapanam, it bathes the soul in nectar. But there is a process that one has to follow, and this, of course, is revealed in the succeeding verses of Srikastak. But this is chanting Hare Krishna. This is the holy name. This is the gift of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, I would like to take a few minutes till 4:30 to read some glories of the holy name that we have collected. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita, originally from Kali Santara Upanishad. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. These 16 names, composed of 32 syllables, are the only means to counteract the evil effects of Kali Yuga. In all the Vedas, it is seen that across the ocean of nations, there is no alternative to the chanting of the holy name. Kaleo Doshanad Hei Rajan Asti Eko Mahaguna. Anyone know the rest? Kirtanadeva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Paramraje. My dear King, although Kali Yuga is full of faults, it is a miserable place. It is a difficult time. Mandasa Manda Mateo Manda Abhagya Upadruta. Everyone's mind is so disturbed. Although Kali Yuga is full of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. It is that simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. Whatever result was obtained in Satya Yuga by meditating on Vishnu, in Treta Yuga by performing sacrifices, and in Dwapara Yuga by serving the Lord's lotus feet, can also be obtained in Kali Yuga simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Those who are advanced, this is from the Bhagavatam also, those who are advanced and highly qualified are interested in the essence of life, know the good qualities of Kali Yuga, and tomorrow, and perhaps even more the next day, on the third day, we shall discuss the great blessing of Kali Yuga. And you know what the great blessing of Kali Yuga is? I couldn't decipher the murmurings. Huh? Yes, but there's an intermediary step that Kali Yuga will benedict you with continuously. It's called anxiety. Unstopping anxiety. Unstopping, non-stopping, and unstoppable anxiety. And how to turn that into blessings is the art of Krishna consciousness and the art of surrender, really. But that, Krishna willing, we shall speak of on the third day. Such people, those who understand the glories of Kali Yuga, they worship the age of Kali because in this age, simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can advance in spiritual life and attain life's goal. In this age of Kali, there is no other religious principle than the chanting of the holy names, which is the essence of all the Vedic hymns. This is the purport of all the scriptures. I think Ishwara Puri said this to Mahaprabhu. Devotional service, beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is the ultimate religious principle for the living entity in human society. From the Bhagavatam, 6th canto, the Yamadutas hear this from Yamaraj. O King, Sukadev Goswami says to Maharaj Prakrit, this is because Maharaj Prakrit wants to know, what should I do? I'm about to die. Raise your hand if you've ever seen anyone close to death. It's very terrifying and difficult, the most difficult time. So Maharaj Prakrit asked, what should I do? And this was one of the answers practically. Constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita. The absolute truth is Sri Krishna, and loving devotion to Sri Krishna exhibited in pure love is achieved through congregational chanting of the holy name, which is the essence of all bliss. This is from Padyavali, Rupa Goswami. Has compiled this from Padma Purana, I believe. The holy name of Krishna is transcendentally blissful. It bestows all spiritual benediction, for it is Krishna himself, the reservoir of all pleasure. Krishna's name is complete, and it is the form of all transcendental mellows. It is not a material name under any condition, and it is no less powerful than Krishna himself. Since Krishna's name is not contaminated by the material qualities, there is no question of its being involved in Maya, Purna Shuddha Nitya Mukta. Krishna's name is always liberated and spiritual. It is never conditioned by the laws of material nature. This is because Krishna and Krishna's name are identical. They are the same. All glories, this is from Padma Purana, all glories to the all-blissful holy name of Krishna, which causes the devotee to give up all conventional religious duties, meditation, and worship. When somehow or another this name is uttered, even once by a living entity, the holy name awards him liberation. The holy name of Krishna is the highest nectar. It is my very life and my only treasure. From Narada Pancharatra. The essence of all Vedic knowledge, comprehending the three kinds of Vedic activities, karma, jnana, upasana, khandhas, the chanda or Vedic hymns, and the processes for satisfying the demigods. The essence is included in the eight syllables, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. This is the reality of all the Vedanta. The chanting of the holy name is the only means to cross the ocean of nescience. From Brihad Vishnu Purana, simply by chanting one holy name of Vishnu, of Hari, a sinful man can counteract the reactions to more sins than he is able to commit. This is from Vishnu Dharma, coming from the Nectar Devotion, Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. The word Krishna is so auspicious that anyone who chants this holy name immediately gets rid of the sinful reactions of sinful activities from many, many births. From Srimad Bhagavatam. From Skanda Purana. By once chanting the holy name of the Lord, which consists of the two syllables, Hari, one guarantees his path to liberation. This Ishwar Puri said to Mahaprabhu, and we're going to read this later, so I won't read it now. I'll read another one. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says to Sanatana Goswami, of the nine processes of devotional service, the most important is to always chant the holy name of the Lord. If one does so, avoiding the 10 kinds of, one very easily obtains the most valuable love of Godhead. From Chaitanya Charitamrita. The holy name of Krishna is so attractive that anyone who chants it, including all living entities, moving and non-moving, and even Lord Krishna himself, becomes imbued with love of Krishna. This is the effect of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Mahaprabhu says to Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy, as a result of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one makes such great advancement in spiritual life that simultaneously his material existence terminates and one receives love of Godhead. The holy name of Krishna is so powerful that by chanting even one name, one very easily achieves these transcendental riches. Srila Rupa Goswami in Vidagdha Madhava says, I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. Just imagine the consciousness that the person who's saying this verse must be in. I do not imagine what he is relishing. I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance within the mouth. We then desire many, many mouths.
When the name enters the holes of the ears, we desire many millions of ears. And when the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and therefore all the senses become inert. There's more we could read, but I won't read more now because I want to have a break. It's already... Yeah, we're okay. From Skanda Purana. I offer my obeisances unto Him, the infallible Lord, because simply by either remembering Him or vibrating His holy name, one can attain the perfection of all penances, sacrifices, or fruit of activities, and this process can be universally followed. To say nothing of the spiritual advancement of persons who see the Supreme Person face to face, even a person born in a family of dog eaters immediately becomes eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices if he once utters the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or chants about Him, hears about His pastimes, offers Him obeisances, or even remembers Him. Oh, how glorious are those whose tongues are chanting the holy name. Even if born in the families of dog eaters, such persons are worshipable. Persons who chant the holy name of your Lordship must have executed all kinds of austerities and fire sacrifices and have achieved all the good manners of the Aryans. To be chanting the holy name of your Lordship, they must have bathed at holy places of pilgrimage, studied the Vedas, and fulfilled everything required. Okay, let's take a break for 15 minutes. So, why don't we come back at exactly a quarter of, please? Okay? Hare Krishna!
Hare Krishna!
Very good. Go ahead, keep going, it's all right. Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, you can walk around, you can jump around, you can chant around. Or register around over there.